everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody to the February 4th, 2019 Bertie County Board of Commissioners meeting. Commissioner Lee will lead us in our invocation and also a pledge of allegiance. Commissioner Lee.
I'd like to call on a dear friend, Reverend White Hirsch from First Baptist Telford, to lead us in invocation. Thank you for being here.
Shall we pray? Gracious God, I would say we bless you, God, first of all, for your grace and for your mercy. And as we come, God, to take care of the business of this county, God, remind us that Matthew said, how can a house divided stand? God, so we ask right now that you will grant us unity in the name of Jesus. God, I pray that as we live together, we laugh together, we pray together, that God, we will work together for the common good of this great county of Bertie County. Now, God, we ask you to bless our commissioners right now, our leaders of this county, that they will operate according to Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, and they will trust in the Lord with all their heart, lean not to their own understanding, but all their ways they will acknowledge you, and you will direct their path. God, we're believing for a great meeting, but more so, God, we're believing that all that we do in Bertie County, you will be glorified as we continue to grow as a county and as a people. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen.
Shall we stand? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Thank you, Pastor Whitehurst. We always start our meetings off with a three-minute comment section. It'll be 3 minutes per person. When you come up to the microphone, introduce yourself. Please do not address any commissioner personally. Your name, your address, and where you live. And is there anybody for three-minute comments? No three-minute comments? Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Donnell Baysmore from Kelton, North Carolina. I just want to speak a few minutes about our road, which is Country Court. Country Court Lane, that's exactly 2 miles west of North Carolina. And I noticed that we had a water department truck coming back up the lane. Truck got stuck. And I had to pull the truck out. That's how bad the lane is. And my next door neighbor, she has 2 cars and a truck. She had to leave both her cars out to her daughter's house and grab a truck in and out. That's how bad it is. And I myself have to leave my car to my mother's house because I had a problem going in and out. and you got stuck every time you went in and out. And we really have a serious problem because I think we put probably 15 loads of sand in the road. And I guess it might have lasted about 3 months. And we're back to the same thing before. So we really need some help. It's a country court name. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Good, ma'am.
My name is Josephine Jenkins, and my trail court is in Lewiston, and PGR Trail Court, and that trail court is a mess. Folks cannot come in and go out. The cars mess, such as tires being flat, and from the front to the back, by my part, it's a whole, I cross the path, and a week ago, my brother got sick, and the big squad got back there. I mean, it took them maybe about 15 or 20 minutes. So I'm looking for the big squad to come and I ain't seen nobody. And when they did right there, and they was upset because they said that they didn't like where the path looked. And he said they was just on about to talk to y'all about the path stuff, but it's really messed up. And then the nurse came out there Friday Sunday. She had turned around because she couldn't get back there. She had turned around and come back to Jack French Road, come back around that way to get to my house. So it's been messed up and we really need some help. But that pass is, y'all see, is to our peace.
Yes, ma'am.
And I appreciate if y'all help me out, pray the Lord, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you to all for, now on behalf of Blue Jay, I want to speak on behalf of Blue Jay tonight. Thank you all for allowing us to be here. Our members, we all please stand. We some of our members. We want personally to thank you, Ms. Bird, for representing our district and all the county commissioners for the job that you have done in helping the Indian Woods community.
Can you speak up while this is going on?
Yes, we want to thank all of the commissioners, especially Ms. Bird, who represent Indian Woods area, for their support over the years and the project that we have started there in Indian Woods. We want to welcome aboard the Vice Chair, Mr. Atkins, Commissioner Atkins. But the project has been a success in helping a lot of people in our community. And we're asking or requesting that you, in naming this building, the project, Blue Jay Recreation Center, and founder, Bob Small, Ferris Small. So we ask that you all help us out on that. But in the past, it has helped a great deal with law enforcement. We have law enforcement that grew up in the area, and it's been a positive thing for the whole entire county. We have EMT workers from there. We have me, myself, is a detective. We have teachers, so it's a positive thing that you all have done. And we hope to keep it going and continue funding. So we ask that you request that you help out on this name of the building. Thank you.
Mr. Rascu,
yes.
What is the exact name, the full name that you would like for the building to have?
Blue Jay Recreation Center, and then underneath, Bart F. Smallwood, founder.
Okay.
You all know Bob was the founder of this project.
Absolutely. It's on the internet, matter of fact, if you look it up.
Yes.
Mr. Manager, we need a motion on this tonight.
That's up to the board. It would be very helpful.
How's the board feel?
So moved.
Second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
So moved, Mr. Rascu.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Smallwood, thank you. Okay. Okay.
Hey, my name is Anthony Smallwood. I'm the father of Bob Fearon Smallwood, the son. I just want to say thank you, commissioners, for supporting us in Blue Jay Indian Woods Road, Blue Jay stuff. And I just wanted to give a dedication to all you commissioners that you are doing a wonderful job and keep on doing what you're doing. And in Jesus' name, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smallwood. Any other comments? If there's no other comments, we'll move forward. Tonight, Mr. Goodwin, who is representative for District 1, is supposed to be here. He had to cancel out the legislative session. Something come up. Chris Hilbert, Holland Consultant.
Thank you. Good evening. As on the agenda, that was going to give an update on the Hurricane Matthew recovery projects, and then we have two items regarding the DRA program.
Mm-hmm.
Quick update, the biggest project is the buyout project. We have received about 27 title opinions out of the 34. So far, we've got surveys and appraisals on 12 units, and we will be making offers on those first 12 houses this month, starting probably this week. And usually, once we have an accepted offer, we'll make closing within 30 days of that. So there's got to be some financial transactions between the state, that kind of thing. So we'll really be ramping up that. We've got 9 more units that we have appraisals and surveys ordered for. So we've got everybody working on them. So, on the elevation side, the engineer is under contract and he will be starting this month on the first bid package, public buyer.
So, Chris, the offers that you'll be making, that's the letters that'll be going out?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I've heard about the letters, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. And then tonight we have two houses in the DRA program, which is the county's DRA program. These two units they have suffered repetitive flooding. They're actually outside the floodplain, but they get flooding. One of them's a rehab, one of them's a rehab with an elevation. We're recommending award to the low bidders for both of those units. These awards will be contingent on approval by the state.
Those two properties, one of them is on 17 and the other one is?
They're both on 17. They're both in that same area.
Good. Good. We got how many houses? 45 that are being bought out or either raised?
There's 34.
34?
Being bought out, 11 elevations.
Okay, so a total of 45 then.
45.
Okay.
Yeah. And then these are separate.
Now, if there's money left over out of that $5 million, will there be other houses put on that list?
We will try. Yeah, the state's got to approve that. FEMA's got to approve that. But yes,
okay.
After we get through the houses, we will try to. We may be able to buy out some houses in some other programs as we identify them.
Okay.
Chris, my question is always about the DRA program, because as you know, there's a funded program through the Mideast that's doing some of the same thing, that's under $40,000 repairs. We have already approved every house that's cleared us and starting construction. I just submitted 2 more this week. We still have money. So if there are any that you have on your list that are under 40, I mean, our process is a little fast. We use the same paperwork. So, you know, but we're already there starting work. So, if we don't want to lose that money. And this is, you know, not only for Matthew, but also for Florence, too. But we don't want to lose that money. So if they're any under 40 grand, right, we can get to them almost immediately.
Yeah, and every program's got different parameters, like you said, the other 40 grand. So. The DRA program has a little bit different parameters, which is the next item on the agenda, where they've submitted an amendment for approval that needs to go back to the state. But yes, we will funnel anything we
and
can't
our,
do over
right.
to.
And our East. Income elevation is higher,
yeah.
So we include a few more folks, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's one of the things on the amendment is that it's kind of they're helping identify the eligibility requirements. They were a little bit loose in the original amendment, so now they're a little bit more specific now.
We also have the $1 million grant money for low to moderate income of $50,000 that you're working on now, correct?
Right, that's the DRA, yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay. All right.
So we need a motion to approve these two projects in just this.
So moved.
Second.
We have a first, we have a second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, and then we need a motion to approve Mr. Trent to sign the amendment that the state has sent regarding the DRA program.
We have a motion.
Move to give the chairman authority to sign to approve.
Just, okay, so proper first and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm going to be leaving, so.
That's fine. We were going to throw you out in just a second.
Glad you are.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Mr. Bland Blaker, excuse me, Mr. Bland Baker of Trillium, Northeast Director.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to be here, and commissioners as well, to just give you a brief update on what's been going on with Trillium this past year. And I want to take a minute to thank Commissioner Daysmore. She actually serves on my advisory board, and she's been a good spokesman and representative for Berkeley County, so I'm really glad to have her as well. And I want to introduce Hope Bailey. She was with me this morning in Herbert County, and I just completely forgot her. Hope is our system of care coordinator for Berkeley County. System of care is, for lack of a better word, an organization where they address the needs of specifically children in all of our counties, and this is specifically for Berkeley County. She's very active in that collaborative. They meet on a monthly basis. They bring together school officials, they bring together sometimes law enforcement, they bring providers in the community to kind of examine the resources, find out what they are, look at needs and gaps, report them back to Trillium. And she's also very active in the JCPC meetings that we have in Berkeley County as well. So I just wanted to introduce her. You probably know her more than you know me, recognize her more. She's in Berkeley County quite a bit. So I just wanted to talk a little bit, very briefly, about some of the updates for Trillium this past year, and I guess it's the year for change. We've had a lot of changes this past year, and they're moving forward. We've had changes in legislation, we've had funding changes, we've had coverage changes, organizational changes. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of those. I guess in terms of the coverage change, when I was here last year, we had just admitted Nash into our catchment area at Deborah's West, and the division approved that. This past July, we added Columbus County as well, which brings us to 26 counties. And for the 26 counties, that brings our population in our catchment to about 1,000,004. The Medicaid eligibles, which is what our funding is based on, is about 200,000 now in our 26 counties. We manage a network of about 500 providers across those 26 counties, and last year we spent $355 million approximately on services for the individuals in our 26 counties. So in terms of legislative changes, which is probably the biggest change for us, back in June, General Assembly approved Senate Bill 403, which was the Medicaid reform, which is changed. It's going to change the whole look of Medicaid for all of our consumers and all of our counties across North Carolina. So basically, right now, you know, we've been responsible for all the behavioral health services, for all the Medicaid and the indigent population for our counties. And that would be no matter how mild your symptoms are, or no matter how severe your symptoms, we covered all the behavioral health services. Not anymore. Moving forward, there are two plans. There's the standard, the commercial plan, and there's the tailored plan. The standard plan covers anybody that has a very low to mild behavioral health issue. The tailored plan covers all the more severe, high-risk individuals.
So what's going to happen, they're going to take away our mild to moderate individuals out from under us. We will no longer manage those services for them at all. That will go to the standard plan individuals. So the standard plans are going to be managed by commercial plans. The other big difference in what Medicaid is going to look like is that not only will Medicaid be handling one agency, be handling behavioral health services, they'll be handling the physical health and the pharmaceutical. All three of those will be covered for those individuals that fall in the standard plan and for those individuals that fall in the total plan. So back in October, the standard plan went out for bid at the division, and they just announced those bidders, the awards of those bidders today. People like United Health, Blue Cross, some of those commercial plans are going to be managing those standard plans. The tailored plans are going to be coming in much a little bit later than that. So we've still got our work cut out for us in terms of that. The Innovations Waiver Services that cover individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, as well as the state-funded services, will still be managed under the tailored plan, along with the more severe symptoms. So actually what it looks like is the tailored plan RFP will go out early part of 2020. They will make those awards in May 2020. And then we'll have a readiness review in 2021 in February, and then they'll go live in July, which seems like a long way off, but when you talk about everything that we're going to have to do to get ready for that, it's just around the corner. Because there'll be a lot of funding changes. One of the big differences, these commercial plans, they've never managed Medicaid services before. They've only managed those people who have their insurance, like Blue Cross has only managed people with Blue Cross. So they've never managed Medicaid services before for anybody, physical or otherwise. So that's going to be a big change for them. So our per member per month, which is how we're funded, will be higher because those individuals are going to cost more in addition to the physical health and the pharmaceuticals. The individuals that we serve will be lower, but the money is not going to be better because the individuals are going to be have a greater need. So the other good thing I think about this Medicaid reform is that it's more of a whole person care. It's not that you're going to have an insurance company over here going to approve this, and then this insurance company is going to approve this part. One insurance company, whether it's us, and then for the standard plan, they will be covering that whole individual for all of their services. So in the long run, hopefully the care will be better, the outcomes will be better because one entity is managing all of those services for that one individual. One of the other things that's going to be really good, I think, about this this Medicaid transformation is that there's a very strong care management component, very robust, built into the tailored plan. The MCO tonight does care coordination. Not everybody gets that. It's based on what their criteria that the state has put in our contract. But in the tailored plan, every single person that is on the tailored plan will have a care manager. Every single one. And we will be doing that. That will be contracted to most likely maybe health departments. And some DSSs will probably participate in that as well. So I think that's probably a good thing because they'll not only see that they make their psychiatric appointments, they're going to see that their blood pressure is checked regularly, they'll see that the cholesterol is checked, there'll be one person will be managing all of those services, so I think that would be a good thing. If we all survive it, I'm not sure about that. But anyway, so one of the other things as far as organizational changes for Trillium that is also a part of the Medicaid transformation is addressing the social determinants of health. This is something that we have not done. Back in the old Thomas S. days,
when we had that class action lawsuit, when all these individuals came out of Cherry Hospital, we were responsible for managing all of their care, but that was just for that small population. That's the going away a long time ago. So what will happen is now, Secretary has identified transportation, housing, food deficits, employment, and personal safety are the areas that are going to be addressed in this tailored plan. And we have organized a new department that we've hired some folks, and we're going to be doing some work with DSSs in the community to address, figure out ways to address the transportation issue. We already have a housing department that's already working on ways to help people with affordable housing, those kinds of things. So that's going to be a big part of the tailored plan as well.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Blaine?
Pardon me?
Any questions? Any questions?
Yeah, I do have one important question for me. I mean, as you know, the state treasurer is recommending a $400 million cut to reimbursements from the state. Our local hospitals here, Vidant, their portion of that is $40 million, 10% of that. But what's your take on that? And what I hear is that it could evolve into diminished services for us, because most of these local hospitals are losing money. We're fortunate one here at Bertie, at least through last year, was making money. But a $40 million cut in reimbursements, is any of that going to hit Trillium in terms of you guys and your reimbursement rate?
I honestly don't think it will for us. Of course, our funding is based on what we spent the year before. And then, of course, as we add accounting, then we negotiate that rate, and we can probably get a little bit of an increase. So I think for what you're talking about, a lot of times, and hopefully with this new Medicaid reform, there'll be less people going to the hospital. There'll be more people looking after these folks on a one-on-one basis. And so, if you've got heart failure, you won't have to go into the hospital, because you're going to be going to that doctor on a more regular basis, and you can have somebody that's helping you look after those physical as well as mental health services. Yeah. So that, I mean, that's kind of a slim explanation, yeah, but I can see that helping some.
And over time, everybody's hopeful that as conditions improve, that will be the case. But coming out of the chute, right, where we're still dealing with the same things that have, and if we cut services at the hospitals right now, if you're having a baby, you want to get obstetric care, you've got to go 40 miles.
Right.
And now if they cut it out at one of the two, people are going to have to drive even further than that. So the cost is going to increase, right?
Right.
And hospitals get reimbursed less. I mean, I just haven't heard an explanation that makes a whole lot of sense coming out of the chute. This is something that was tapered in, as we could understand.
Well, we had the CFO of the hospital come talk to us last meeting, and they're coming up with some resolutions and things of that nature, because in our rural areas where we have our rural hospitals, it's going to be detrimental.
Right.
It's going to be very detrimental. And again, it's going to hurt the cities also, large areas, metropolitan areas also.
We've been so fortunate in Bertie.
Yes.
We've had hospitals that have survived for a very long time and have provided great care and done great. And I hear your concern, and I share the same thing.
Two of those three are losing money right now.
That's right.
So you can imagine, $40 million is going to lose.
And Mr. Westman, what answer has that question to you is going to hurt you. So, anyhow.
One of the other things I did just want to mention about Berkeley County specifically, and then I'll just wrap up, is that, so for last year, for Berkeley County, we served 790 individuals out of Berkeley County. 687 of those had mental health issues. 118 of those had substance abuse issues, and then 87 of those had intellectual and developmental disabilities they're struggling with. And so for Berkeley County, we spent almost $7 million in services for individuals in Berkeley County. One of the other things I just mentioned quickly is we continue to provide CIT training at no cost to law enforcement. We've done at least three or four this past year that I know of in Berkeley County, as I helped do the training. So, and they work with police departments, they work with EMS, that expanded that service to the MS staff as well. So we're doing those services. I know that we're also continuing to contract with Recovery International to do recovery classes for substance use and for mental health issues in Berkeley County. We have classes every month. Sometimes they're held at Winston Gardens, but instead of the Republic, sometimes they're held at Rachel's House, which is a day program here in Windsor. So we're still trying to use our money back in the community. I know we spent, I think you all actually had $4,800 in NUC money. And half of that money we spent healing transitions in Raleigh, but we actually paid for 59 days with for individuals from Berkeley County that are going in. And we spent some more money, but that was specifically about the ABC money. We have to give you a report on that. And so that's very briefly, but I just wanted to talk about it. Without any other comments or questions for me?
I just want to say, Trey has been a great partner for Berkeley County and also for the rural areas. You guys have really put forth and done some really great things.
One more thing.
Go right ahead.
I didn't make a note of it, but you know, one of the things that we have been really working on is an increase in opioid providers. We've had an RFP open for Berkeley County for 7 months, no takers. So we've left it open indefinitely. And we have a department that actually works on trying to recruit providers for our RFPs or spark some interest for providers to come in and do that. So that is still an open RFP, and we're still hoping that that's going to come.
Last question, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask. Last question. Glenn, bed space. Are we doing anything to give us more bed space? Because that's still crazy. I mean, we're using up our hospital space,
for psychiatric,
right? Psychiatric care, using up our prison space. And there's waiting lists everywhere. I mean, a lot of money being spent for very good things, but bed space ought to be high on this list.
And give you some stats, I mean, like Mr. Wesson was saying, 60% of all inmates that are going into the local lockup, 13 Martin Correctional Facility, are basically the psychological or their medical, as far as drug addiction.
Right.
And that's 60%. That is actual numbers that are coming in there. So out of 100 inmates, 60 of them have these issues. And right now, we can't find psychiatrists. Of course, we're doing the video monitoring, things of that nature. But one-on-one is the best thing to do. We have pastors that are coming in there talking and things of that nature. But the other thing is, too, that we're finding out is that if you don't have care for people when they get released. They don't have a primary physician when they get released out of jail, out of the Berkeley Martin Correctional Facility. They may only be in there for 30 or 40 days or 10 days or 5 days. And when they get out, they don't have that primary doctor that they can go and see. And I'm a big pusher right now because I'm the vice chair on the jail board. I'm a big pusher that we need to be using our local medical people here in Berkeley County to treat our people in our jail for when they do come out, they can have a doctor to go to treat them for drug abuse, mental illness, things of this nature, to make sure that they're taking their medications and this, that, and the other. We don't have that. And right now, that's one thing I'm pushing for on the board of the Berkeley Martin Correctional Facility Board to have that done. And again, sometimes pushers push back, but we got to move towards that. Even if it costs us a little bit more money, we need to do that. So just letting people know.
Yeah, there's also, that's one of the other ways that medical crisis can be used. As people, they can't go into the jails. The service will not allow them to do that. But as they're getting released, medical crisis can be called, and they can't go into the jail, but they can pick them up. They can see them when they come out. And you know, one of the things they do is they try to connect people to services. They usually hold them on a caseload for 2 weeks until they get an appointment, until they're connected to a provider, and then they follow back up. If they didn't make the appointment, they will follow back up to be sure they do get connected. And so that is one way. Not all counties are using the process that way.
Now that's a good thing, but that 200-plus bed facility over in Greenville,
yep,
that was in the budget, mm-hmm, and everybody was hoping that was going to be the silver bullet, now that's dead. And so now we're in the same shape we were. And you know, mobile crisis is great, but it's not going to treat those seriously ill people who mm-hmm. need to be hospitalized mm-hmm. to get treatment.
You're right.
So somebody's got to help us carry this message to Raleigh.
Well, and what you're talking about, this is going to have to be the state level.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And just get the general public, since we have a large audience tonight. Each bed at Bertie Martin Correctional Facility is anywhere from $25,000 to $30,000 a year for someone to stay there. May not be a full 1 year inmate, but he may there be 1 week, somebody else taking it the next week. And if they have drug addictions or mental issues, mental health issues, if we can treat them and have our own primary doctors here in our area doing this and not somebody out of Alabama on TV screens and things of this nature, that is the route that we need to go. And yes, will it cost us a little bit more money? Absolutely, but I think it's money well spent, and I'll get off that soapbox. Thank you very much, sir.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blaine, for all that you do.
Melvin Powers, excuse me, I'm sorry. Yes.
No,
you good? Okay. Melvin Powers, Deputy Director, Chet Oak Area Development, Kayla.
Good evening.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I hope you are.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the invitation to come.
Hey, Miss Sally.
How are you?
I'm good, ma'am.
Our
ma'am.
Executive Director's here, so yep. I'm going to defer to her. I'm going to step into my banner white role and help hand out some things.
Okay.
Mr. Powers and I both are delighted to be here with you tonight, and thank you for the opportunity. And I would like to personally say thank you to the county for your support over 57 years, because Kayla is now 57 years old. And going back to 1966, when community action agencies were first established, the counties of Bertie, Hertford, Halifax, Northampton chose Kayla to be the community action agency for the four counties. And as part of that action, one of the responsibilities of the county is to appoint our two board members to our board, but which they serve a two-year term. And we do currently have a vacancy, so we would encourage the board to appoint someone to serve on the CADA board. It can be a county commissioner, or it can be someone from the county that you so choose. Mr. Peel, James Peel from Powellsville, is one of the representatives on the board now from the county. But one of the things in the bylaws for CADA that a lot of people do not know, and I think it would be interesting to know, is that if CADA, something happened, that there were no longer any community action agencies, and CADA went out of existence, whatever resources CADA has are to be divided among the counties that CADA serves. So I'm not sure that we have anything you want or would have if that happened. We don't think it's going to happen, because we're looking at ways to continue to be sustainable, and we appreciate everything you do to help us. We appreciate the space that you provide, the funding that you provide, and your general support in helping us do the things we do to counteract poverty, the causes and the conditions of it in your county. One of the reasons that we're here tonight is to talk about the CSBG Block Grant Fund. And the CSBG statute on the federal level is what sets up community action agencies. And over the years, it's been one of the primary funding sources until recently. And it seems that the funds keep getting cut, even though the need may not be decreasing. In 2016-2017, we received $63,362. To serve 5,083 people that were identified as being in poverty. We forward to 2019-2020, our allocation is $49,341. And according to the numbers that the state has provided, there has been a decrease in poverty from 4,000 to 4,438 people. I'm not sure that that is an accurate number, because sometimes this is based on an estimate at this point. It's not a full count census documentation, but it's what we have to work with. One of my concerns, and it's been my concern for many years, is that I do not like the state formula for how they determine in what amount of funding you get that comes to a county, because they base it all raw numbers, and by that I mean they base it on population, not percentage of poverty. They're looking at the numbers of people they say are in poverty. We know that if we look at the designation of Bertie County as a Tier 1 county, that there are, Bertie itself does not have the resources locally to make the difference that a Wake County would make. But if you're basing the people in your monies based on the just the number of people in poverty, someplace like Wake or Mecklenburg County is going to receive more money to deal with their poor, to help their poor, than you are in Bertie. They do not take into consideration in the state formula the fact that there are less resources in rural areas to impact the problems that you have there. Just like the transportation that was mentioned earlier for the people who were coming out and needing services, we don't have an on-demand transportation. We don't have the transportation. We don't have as many as homeless centers. We don't have the things that you're going to find in other places that make a difference. Many states have a state plan for the federal money, and this is federal money that's block granted to the state. Years ago, it came directly to us from the federal government, but now it's part of a block grant. And when we were getting it directly from the federal government, it was based on percentages, not on the count of people. But some states have a provision that gives additional funds to rural areas because it's harder to provide services in rural areas. Many work with a, from the standpoint of the percentage of people in poverty. And then some have a combination of all of those. The state of North Carolina is going to be looking at the formula this year. I have been asked to serve on that committee. I don't know what will happen, but I do hope that they will take into consideration, even looking at the fact that Tier 1 counties get more money than other than Tier 2 and Tier 3 are supposed to get more money from state allocations. But that is something that we hope will happen. We don't know. But we have presented to you the work plan. And the work plan is basically the same as it has been, working with self-sufficiency and working with resource referral and acquiring funds to help. Last year, we were very fortunate to be able to leverage between $120,000 and $130,000 in energy share funds. And this year, we're already on track to leverage a lot of money from Dominion. Those of you who are Dominion customers, if you see on your bill, give to Energy Share, an idea of telling you how much you can give extra to your on your bill, that money comes back into helping your neighbors who might have problems paying for their heat source. And it's not just for Dominion bills, for Dominion customers. It helps the town of Windsor with people who have utility needs for their electricity here in the town of Windsor. It helps with Roanoke Electric. It helps with gas dealers. It helps with fuel dealers. If they're burning wood, if their primary source of heat is wood, it can help with that. And but there is a big need for that kind of service, and we are continuing to do that. And that, again, the staff who work in CSBG does that. We have just finished four single-family rehab houses in Bertie County. That is where we go in and do comprehensive rehab to houses. And again, the staff at CSBG takes those applications, help to see that that is leveraged for these families. Our Head Start program is going well, and we continue to serve children throughout the county. One of the things that we have done that we're glad to be able to do is we're now doing a partnership at Askewville, at the school there with the public schools, where we are jointly enrolling and some children that are enrolled in their pre-K as well as in our Head Start program, and that way we can enhance, provide more services and all to those children. We are concerned about some things. And one of those that I want to share with you is something that unfortunately, it's beyond CADA's control and beyond your control.
Government shutdown.
Hmm?
I just say to myself, government shutdown, probably.
Yes, yes. You're correct. And the reason is, and we have informed landlords, and we've informed Housing Choice Voucher participants, and Housing Choice Voucher in the old days was Section 8. So you may have heard of Section 8. The way the program is set up now, on the first day of the month, we get the funding to pay the rents. We will be notified yet that the funds are on their way to our bank account. We got the funds for February, so we're in the process of getting those payments out. We got that notice on the 1st. We got a notice before that it would be coming on the 1st. What we know is, because the budget for HUD has not been approved, unless before February the 15th they pass a resolution, a continuing resolution, or they pass a budget, or they stay in session after 7/15 and do something, we may not get any funds to pay March's payments. Eventually, we would probably get them, we hope. We have sent notice to the landlords, we've sent notices to the tenants, making them aware of the situation and asking for their patience while we tried to see what is going to happen. Now, when HUD was closed before, we couldn't contact HUD because the people are not there. The same with USDA rural development and other programs that were shut down. So our concern is that everyone understands that this is not something that CADA can control, not something the county can control. It is a federal issue, and we need everyone to be patient because we are going to do our best, if the funds are there, to get the funds out to the landlords. When you think about the number of families that we assist in the county and the number of landlords that are assisted, have to think about the fact that that money is turning over in your economy every day. And so hopefully it will be something that the government is not going to close, that they are going to come up with a continuing resolution or a new budget. We also, some of the families qualify for utility assistance, and we pay that utility assistance directly to the utility provider, and we have notified them that there is a possibility that we won't be able to do that in March. And to please be patient with the people that they have on their service, and that as soon as this is resolved, we would be getting that money out. So there is a ripple effect. I wish I had an easy solution to it. It used to be many years ago that when you worked with the HUD program, if you could manage to save a little bit of money, you got to keep it for a rainy day like we're having now. But they've got a program that they started several years ago. If you don't spend your money, they're going to recoup it, because they're going to send you a notice and say, you have this much reserve on hand, we're going to deduct that from the payment we're sending you this month. So we don't have a rainy day fund or our monies that set up that we can cover this. But I just want people to know before the 1st of March gets here what the situation is and how we need everyone to be aware that we are trying to do what we can, but we don't have any control.
Miss Sally, I think that was very well said. And Pastor Whitehurst, I tell you, your blessing was right on target, because when you see people start using the military, other people of poverty as tools or weapons to get what they want and things of that nature, that's wrong.
So we're serving 17 families here
with
in
the CSBG. That would be just that's with the CSBG. That's okay. The CSBG, the 49,341 in the self-sufficiency component, in the resource and referral component. All of the people that are assisted with the energy share, assisted with applications to other places that they can get resources, is added to that number. Because one of the things that CSBG was designed for initially back in the 60s and still applies now is that you're supposed to use your CSVG staff to leverage other funds. And so that's what we're doing when we're leveraging energy share, when we're leveraging other things.
Just to also be advised, here in Berkeley County, we still have funding available in the energy share and the emergency food and shelter program. I think Chris Meade told me we had $45,000 that's available still in energy share, and about $3,500 that's still available in the emergency food and shelter. And they began setting appointments in both of those programs today.
Realized that the shutdown could have possibly went for the rest of this year. Mm-hmm. How much of a travesty would that have been for a small county like Berkeley? Because I'm thinking the landlords probably wouldn't have that much patience.
I don't think they would have that much patience. I don't think the landlords would. But at the same time, I don't know where landlords would find paying customers to move into their houses, because you look at it, the reason we get the money is because the people cannot afford to pay the market rent.
So Ms. Baseball, you just mentioned today, I think in an email about SNAP, finally we got that. Mm-hmm. You want to speak about that or anything?
SNAP, they will be paying in March.
In March.
Because we had once thought February was going to be the last year.
Yeah, and again, I think that's because North Carolina has found some funds, because I think it's going to, the state has found some funds.
And I would like to say this now. You mentioned you needed one board member, possibly a commissioner. I would love to serve because I'm on the property commission, and I would love to work with this board, see what we can do to help the citizens of Berkeley County.
You ask your chair to send us a letter.
You heard it, Chair.
I got it. You ain't got to fill an application.
There you go. I'm so glad to hear that you're going to be on a board to look at how the state funds poverty in the counties. Because what the citizens who are here need to understand is that Berkeley County, part of the reason that our payment is so very low is because it runs off things like census count. Mm-hmm. And our census count in Berkeley County has forever been crippled. Now, this county has spent a lot of money recently. You're aware of this, to beef up everything from how our records are in compliance with the census count to looking at trying to get people on the ground from the communities that can go in and help take the counts rather than strangers coming in and knocking on people's doors and people don't answer because they don't know these folks. If we don't correct our census count, it affects the money that we get from the state and a lot of programs. And it makes it look like, oh, Berkeley County's not doing as bad. And when they compare those figures to other ways of counting, like DSS and other funding, it doesn't match. So we know the census count's wrong. So we've got to do a great job of informing the public. We've got to count everybody in your household. We need churches. We need community organizations. We need everybody to help us get this count right, because it gives us the kind of money we need in order to be able to do this. And let me mention one other little quick little thing. You heard Ms. Service talk about what they're doing at Askerville Preschool. That's directly because this board funded Better Beginnings,
right,
and we've identified those three-year-old kids, and we've got a waiting list of kids, and Ms. Service and her organization came forward with the money to be able to put those kids in school. So I want to thank you. But it would not have happened unless Better Beginnings was here to identify those kids and say, we know where they are. They need to be in school to get a head start. So thank you.
And that was $100,000 that we funded that program with. The reason I tapped Mr. Weston on the shoulder was because when Mr. Weston and I were elected, that's one thing we talked about was census, because we were going for USDA loans, I think, for water systems and things like that. And it counted against us. They said we had a much higher income level in Berkeley County than it actually was. So the points were against us, and we couldn't get the interest rates that we normally would have gotten.
Pay higher rates.
Pay much higher rates, okay? So that's the reason it's so important. You know, I don't say open the door to any bunch of strangers. Just say, who are you, okay? And they say, we're the census people. please open the door and give them the information they need.
And I wanted to thank Sarah for, we're doing a community needs assessment survey, and I think Sarah put it on your county website. It is also on CADA's website that you can go on and do it there. And we'd like to get as many of them back by this Friday as possible, because we're trying to determine what the people in your community determine are their needs. What are they interested in? Is it housing? Is it employment? Is it education? What are the needs? So as we plan, we know and have information and have data that is from the community that helps us apply for additional funding whenever there's the opportunity. And there are so many needs, but it takes all of us working together, and it takes all of us having a shared vision of how we can make a difference in our community. And on behalf of the CADA staff and board, thank you for your support for 57 years. And we plan on being around, so you don't have to worry about whether we have any assets or not to provide you know, at any time that we can be of assistance or we can come and share some of the information we have, let us know.
I would like to say, while you're on that board, to please mention, I know we go mostly on population, but since the flood, Bertie County lost about 600 people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we are a flood zone, tornado area. So just let them know, we may be small, but we still need much help.
Need much help, and they've got to look at it. If they're really being... They don't even follow their format of how they ask us to send in our proposal, because we're supposed to identify locally what kind of resources we have. And so we can't identify as many resources as a Wake County or someplace does.
Sure.
So they're not even following some of their own guidelines, which I have been speaking about since the 90s, but hopefully maybe this time somebody will listen, hopefully. And again, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the support. Thank you for the opportunity. And we do need a signed form that says that you've had the opportunity to review.
Okay.
You got it from good Sarah.
Okay.
Sarah will take care of it.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Pamela Perry, Executive Director, CPTA. Okay. Doesn't look like she's here tonight. Mr. Manager, you don't see her? I don't see her. Okay, I'm going to skip on down. Jody Ray, Tax Administrator, will introduce the reevaluation project team and review progress.
Good evening. Many of you already know Gary Piner, who's heading up our 2020 reevaluation. I'm going to let him give you an update on where they are and introduce this team to you.
Hey, good
evening, Commissioner Fadel.
How you doing?
Doing good.
We'd like to thank you all for awarding us a job, first off. And, we're very pleased to be working on the job. It's due January 1 of next year. Our team is working individually on different aspects of the job. We're on track to finish the job probably this fall, if not sooner. So we're making good progress. Mr. Gene Roundtree. He's the retired tax administrator from Nash County. He's working with us. He's going to be working closely on schedule of values. He's looking at square foot rates and the adjustments we need to make in that regard. Renee McGinnis, she's a retired tax administrator from Gates County. She's been tracking sales. She's working closely with the land, looking at the land rates and any adjustments we might need to make in that regard. Paul Christensen. Paul has been in the appraisal business, and these two right here have 30 plus years experience each. We're seasoned, we're not old.
And just to let the general public know, I've already caught three of them down there snooping around my place, okay? And they were about a mile back in the woods snooping around, so anyhow, they're there. Okay.
Getting some good information back.
Yeah, they were getting good information, all right.
Paul Christensen, he's just joined us working on the review, the field review. We're working separately, he and I, on that. Paul worked with me in Carteret County for some years. He's been in the appraisal business since the early 90s, haven't you, Paul? work with me at the Carter County Tax Office and then also the Craven County Tax Office. Chase Piner, my son, he's driving for me during the review. His brother Chance is driving for Paul every other week. He works on the Hatteras to Ocracoke Ferry. So his week off, he's coming up here and driving for Paul. Not easier doing the review with a driver. So that's helping out. But hopefully Chase is learning the business during the process too. So again, we're making good progress. Any questions?
Just so the citizens are aware, this rebow is mandatory. It's not something that we really want to do. We have to pay these good folks to come and do what they do. So just so the citizens are aware that it is mandatory. State
requires you do one at least every 8 years, and that'll be the 8-year period, January 1 next year.
And I drew the short stick, and I was willing to negotiate the price with them down from where they were at, so I'll probably get beat up really bad. So anyhow, that's a deal. So.
Well, we were pleased to help you all out, certainly. Okay. And, we're very glad to be here doing it for you.
Got a great team, that's all for sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
all.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on. Jody, you don't have anything else, do you? Okay. All right, board appointments. Do I hear a motion to make Ms. Bazemore a part of?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Ms. Bazemore, for volunteering. Consent agenda. Approved minutes for regular meetings, January 7th, 2019. Approved minutes for work session, January 14th, 2019. Approved minutes for closed session, January 7th, 2019, and January 14th, 2019. Approved the registered deeds, the fees report January 2019, tax department release journal December 2018, and the budget amendments that we have. I have a motion or any questions?
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
I would suggest something.
Please.
And only because this is not an original thought, but you know, I've seen it in a lot of other boards. Scott, I think it might be a great idea sometimes when we look at the budget amendments and changes, any of the things that are, you know, significant for us, to have some explanation, whether it's in the, you know, I'm not saying that it has to be in the meeting, but in the things so that a lot of us, some of new, like Greg kind of going to new, to be able to know what they are with some language, William, that kind of tells us a little bit more what it is. A lot of times we know it's just transferals and things like that. Some of it's been around for a while. That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, the
that
copies
would
be great are in.
Because it would give a little bit more explanation about it. It might help us a little bit, you know?
Okay. We good?
Good.
Okay, we had a first and a second, correct?
Yes.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Discussion items, calendar review. Previously advertised February 19, 2019, be a planning session. You got any things you want to say about that, Mr. Manager, or no? You good to go?
Should be the 18th.
18th. Why has he got 19th again? Why have we got 19th again?
Should be the 18th.
All right, NACO legislative.
At 9 o'clock in the
morning. 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
In here.
In here? Are we here?
In here.
Oh, okay. I thought
we were saying
it
wasn't
there. All right. Okay. Your
schedule says 10 o'clock. NACO Legislative Conference, Washington, December, March 2nd through the 6th, 2019. I think we're all going on that. And you've already made the dates with the senators.
Waiting on Burr. I've got to
okay.
Listen.
All right. Tentative dates for March meeting. We have it set for March 11th. Is everybody good with that on their calendars? I think we already have it set,
yeah.
Don't we?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's it. Commissioner's report. Ms. Bazemore.
I would like to thank the part of our organization and the Windsor Police and the Berkeley County Sheriff Department did an excellent job on Martin Luther King Day. We had a procession from the courthouse to Cedar Landing Missionary Baptist Church, and they did a super job. Also, I will be attending a dinner with the state superintendent of public schools. They have a couple of announcements, and so I wanted to be there to hear it. I think we had a workshop in it that was awesome. And I will be sharing that at our meeting, work session. That's it for me.
Mr. Wesson?
Yeah, just a few things. First of all, just say to the public, you know, just to make you aware of some of the things coming up in Black History Month. On the 16th of this month, HOPE will be having their Black History program. They've had it every year. Excellent speakers that come in and talk about Bertie County specific in terms of the history of Bertie County, African Americans, Native Americans, but this month is specifically African Americans. 9:30 to 1 on the 16th, it's free. Some of the best speakers from around the country, experts from Bertie County. If you want to stay for lunch, it's $15. On the 26th, the Chamber of Commerce will be having their Black History program from 6 to 9 at the Convention Center. This year, they are recognizing senior pastors, senior African-American pastors in Bertie County. So that should be a really good program. I think the superintendent of schools is the mistress of ceremonies, and it should be a really good event. Two things, personal things. I have accepted two appointments, one to the East Carolina University School of Business Management Advisory Council, which advises ECU School of Business on their programs, their recruitment practices, all of their works for the business school. So I'm happy to accept that. I'm also going to be one of the speakers at their leadership conference in March, the 18th and the 19th of March. So I did this once before 2 years ago, and we had about 2,000 people in attendance. So some really timely stuff. I'm going to be speaking on From Diversity to Inclusion and why understanding that difference is important to leaders of the 21st century. Not just that we need to be diverse, but we need to be inclusive in how we recognize what diverse people bring to a business organization. The second appointment is to the Coastal Carolina Ministries. I've been asked to serve on their Cross Coalition Rebuilding Ministries. This is with the Methodist Church, and you've seen the Methodist men working on rehabbing and improving homes, not just in emergency situations, but their mission is to help low-income homeowners live in warm, safe, and secure homes. So I was nominated to that committee and asked if I would serve, and I consider that an honor. Thank you.
Okay, I'll go next. I've been selected to go to UNC Chapel Hill, sit on a forum, reference rural living, have an understanding of rural living and what's happening in the rural areas, especially in development, building, construction, things of that nature. One thing everybody in this audience needs to know is that North Carolina Housing Finance Agency does not pass on state tax credits to any builder or developer that comes into our area that is building more than 2 miles from a grocery store or a drug store. This is completely ludicrous. These rules have been set up by the state, and this is federal money that comes into the North Carolina Housing Finance Agency. I have taken it to people in the Commerce Department who have never heard of it before, senators who have never heard of this before, congressmen who have never heard of this before, and now they're discovering that there's a flaw. The flaw is that a developer that wants to come in and hypothetically put up 48 units of affordable housing to make it affordable gets a tax rebate back from the state, which would be federal money, back to him. If he's making a $1 million investment, that's $250,000 that comes back to him, which means he offsets the cost of the project, which means at that time he can lower the rents or lower the payments of the housing that the houses will be sold from. This is what's happening to us because we are food deprived. Grocery stores can't come into the area because there's subdivisions that cannot support them. If we have it all working together, it will work for us. That's the first thing. The next thing is construction updates. EMS out on County Farm Road is completely built. Electricity's been on and the HVA system has been on since December 10th. Okay? Rock is down finally. The weather has not been our friend at all with all this rain. Rock is down, compacted. Trinity Paving is going to be going in there, and they should have the thing paved out by Wednesday, Thursday latest. The concrete pad for the dumpster will be done on Wednesday. And they're inside polishing the concrete floors because that's what EMS wanted, was polished concrete floors on the inside. Out at Blue Jay, the septic tank. Bryant Laster Septic Tank Company will be putting in septic tanks hopefully on Wednesday, as long as the weather cooperates. We don't have the rain. And also Williamston Glass has came out and measured all the storefront glass and the storefront doors for that building. And that's the updates on that. That's it for me. Greg, you got anything? Okay.
And I'm not sure if it's the same thing, but on February the 11th, next Monday, I'll be attending the Reconnect Rural Urban Forum. Is that the same thing?
No, I'm on 8.
Okay. I've received a scholarship for this. I'm thrilled to be able to go and represent Berkshire County and hopefully bring back some good information from that. On January 15th, I attended the Berkshire County Woodland Landowners Meeting. What a wonderful evening it was. Great food. Heritage House catered, and the meal was just absolutely delicious. But Mr. Billy Barrow, our director for Agricultural Extension, gave some fun facts that night, and I thought I would share a few. For Berkshire County Forest, total area in county, we are 444,281 acres. Out of that acreage, 320,581 is timberland. 72% of the land mass is timbers. And so what does this mean to Berkshire County? Landowners received $10.6 million in harvest value. The forest sector contributed approximately $19.1 million to the county's economy. That's a lot of moolah. It supported 186 jobs with a payroll of $8.4 million. The purpose of the night was to bring educational information and opportunities related to the timber and timber production and marketing to the landowners in Berkshire County. And I believe it was by invitation. You had to have at least 10 acres of land to be invited to this dinner. But it was really interesting, and it was, so when you see a farmer or a timberland owner or a timber farm, tell them thank you for contributing to our economy in such a big way.
There's one other thing I want to bring up that's very important that I forgot. On the 21st of this month, as everybody knows, the Roanoke River has been flooding consistently for the last probably 3 months due to the effects of the outflow, rainfalls, and also the inflows going into Carr Lake Dam and the outflows that they have done on a study that was a 10-year study that does not include the last 3 years where our weather patterns have changed completely to the opposite of so much rain, where we usually get 47 inches of rain, we're now getting 102 inches of rain so far this year. This is called immense flooding all along the farmlands and hunting grounds and things of that nature, all down from Northampton County, Halifax County, Bertie County, Martin County, actually water going under, I think it was 4 or 5 houses, into the vents and also in the duct works and coming into the first floors of houses. And these weren't houses that were on the river. This is where they're just coming up in there. We're having this forum. Congressman Butterfield is going to be here. Senator Erica Smith is the hostess. Bertie County was chosen to be the host county, okay, because we started this fight. We got the Army Corps of Engineer, which we have been on the phone with numerous times. We've also got Mr. Mike Sprayberry, Emergency Services Management Director for the state of North Carolina, going to be here. This is the 21st at 12:30 p.m. I think it's very important. If you have an interest in what's happening with flooding, especially when it's not, natural cause flooding, but it's man-made flooding, because inflows and outflows aren't being calculated, and people just opening up a book says there's released 35,000 CFS of water, and they flood lands, and you're putting farmers out of business, you're putting timber, all this at an endangerment, we got issues, because that's one of our main economic staples here in Bertie County. We got to be working on it. So it's going to be here on the 21st at 12:30. Also, Lewiston picked up a grant, $150,000 grant. We'll be putting up a community center in Lewiston. I'll be meeting with surveyors and land clears. And we had 5 acres of land that was donated by Pastor Gary Corden for this project. Be some baseball fields put up and the community center going up there. Also be used for after school programs and things of that nature. And that's all I've got.
One other thing.
Go ahead.
Just so you know, March the 1st through the 6th, I think all of the commissioners will be going to Washington, D.C. to take part in the legislative forum. This is commissioners from all over the country coming to Washington to talk to their legislators. And we have always had great attendance every year. We get a chance to sit down face-to-face, one-on-one with Burr and Tillis and Butterfield and all the other North Carolina representatives to talk about what are our needs right here in Burt T. County, face-to-face. And we also get to hear from other county commissioners around the country in terms of what they're doing that's successful, best practices. So we learn a lot from this. You know, it's a really good working session. I think our voting delegate is...
We haven't decided yet.
But it's a great session because we learn an awful lot and get to bring back a lot to the county. So
it is a good session when we go up there. So thank you for allowing us to go. Okay, next thing would be 3-minute comments section. Anybody's got any 3-minute comments, please.
Not from the county manager.
I didn't want to hear from those guys. No, I'm teasing. County manager, you got anything?
Just a reminder, we have a resolution from Biden and Bertie. They've asked the board to consider related to the health care issue in the States.
Is everybody ready? Everybody ready? I'd like to move that we approve it.
I have a second. Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
And Scott, could we also, I don't know if they're going to do, are they sending it to neighboring counties?
They're supposed to be.
We can distribute it.
Could we distribute it?
Okay.
Thanks.
Brian indicated it would. Mr. Junior Commissioner?
Okay. First, I would like to say good evening. And you could have skipped over the question. I wouldn't
have. No.
It's been a crazy Monday, so the pillow calling my name. Anyway, first, I want to say that can we please get some sort of crosswalk or some form of way to allow students at Burt T. High School to cross Highway 13 safely.
An overpass walk.
Because I saw some things the other day, and I mean, I was praying to a good God in heaven that no harm would come to them, because it's crazy that the athletes have to run across this highway.
They're not taken by bus anymore?
It depends on the bus development. So now they have to walk or run across this highway, which is supposed to be 35 miles an hour zone for the area. Sometimes I see trucks going a little bit faster than that, but regardless of that. So I would like to see some sort of crosswalk or some way we can get them across safely, because that is a scary sight. And I do not want to see any of my fellow classmates nor anybody's children harmed by that mistake, because I can't, well, it might be a mistake, who knows, because originally the high school was there, but then, you know, we moved across the street, so we didn't calculate for that, but I would like to see something there for that. Mm-hmm. Other than that, everything I heard was pretty nice. And also, I applaud Mr. Commissioner Trent for his visit to my school the other day. I like what you're trying to do for the county and for my classmates. We were actually expecting some company the next day. But thank you, and just excellent job.
Thanks, sir.
That was a great comment. Because it's past time for us to start being proactive versus reactive. So we need to do something before something happens. You're absolutely right. Just appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Attorney?
No, sir, I don't have any report.
Nothing? Okay. We're going to go to 3-minute comment section.
Okay.
Okay. Any 3-minute comments, please?
Well.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm messing with my mouth. I think it was Liam said.
Yes, ma'am.
And she was telling y'all earlier about how our pads are.
Yes, ma'am.
I really appreciate it if we could get some help out there.
Yes, ma'am.
I have family members don't even want to come out there and visit me.
Yes, ma'am.
One of them had to call almost to them, you know, trying to get out. I don't got stuff.
Yes, ma'am.
Numerous times.
Yes, ma'am.
So if we could get y'all help, we really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank yes, you. Ma'am. Will you please step up to the podium, name your name, and where you live at, ma'am?
Hi, I'm here for 112 David Drive, Kempfer.
Yes, ma'am.
And that road is bad, and I got children that walk to the end of the road.
Yes, ma'am.
The rain
is overflowing, they can't even walk out. Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Just to let everybody know, I just want to let everyone know that we have a road safety maintenance ordinance that has been written by the attorneys. We'll be putting it to vote on the 17th of this month.
18th.
Okay. 18th. The 18th. She's 19th. I'm 17th. So anyhow, the 18th of this month at a work session, it will go to a vote. And then after it goes to a vote, if it passes, then it will be a public hearing on it where we hear from the public. Okay. But it has been written by the attorneys, and it's probably one of a kind because not too many places have this. But we're moving forward with it. We'll see which way it goes from there. But it will be done on the 18th. Okay? Any other 3-minute comments?
May I just say that we do hear what you're saying, and I know it's we appreciate you being here. You didn't come out of your house and be here tonight for fun, and you did it because it's important to you, and we hear you.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
My name is James Lee, and I'm at 544 Mount Lottie Road in Windsor. And I'm sure this is probably a sore subject, and you've heard it several times. But the trash that's spilled on the roadway for trucks that's going into the landfill along Caltrack and Republican Road, it's just been a problem ever since I've been there. And I don't know whose responsibility it is to get it up, but it's been terrible. Certainly would like some assistance.
Colonel, one of the things that we have done in the past is that we had inmates going out there collecting trash and this, that, and the other. And I followed a truck. My wife and I were coming from Northampton County from 258 down 308, and it was one of the garbage trucks. It was a Waste Industries truck where they pick up large containers, and it was not covered. And in the back of that truck, all the trash was flying out of the container. So when people want to say people are throwing garbage out, I'm sure people are. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But we do have an issue with this. I called FHP, not FHP, I used to be a state trooper in Florida, North Carolina Highway Patrol, in reference to this. They said they were going to be working on the situation. So far, I haven't seen any more improvement on the issue. My wife tells me about it all the time, how horrible it looks, especially after they get through cutting the grass, it even looks even worse. So that's the deal. So I'm following trucks in with no canvas over top of them. Garbage is flying out of them, and that's the deal. And that's the majority of the trash that's on the side of the roads.
I've called Republic Services about the, because every truck that leaves that place is supposed to have a cover on it so the trash doesn't. And he assured me that that was happening, but that's clearly not happening.
Well, I'm following them in there.
It's not true. And the other thing is that, you know, we used to be able to use prison labor, right? And occasionally we still can. Occasionally, but there's such a demand on that, even at the fact that they've reduced the time that's available, right, for inmates, then there's more people who want them. So we don't get them as often as we can.
No, they did away with that program.
Altogether? Well, Barry still
there
get.
There are none that go out.
Barry doesn't
now.
Still get anybody? Oh,
they did
worse.
The contract service with the private company.
That's even worse. So if we don't have any prison labor, you know? I saw today that one of the, if you're coming in on, what's the road leading into Windsor, that comes past your brother's place. It comes in from the off 17, right? One of the priests from the Catholic Church was out there today, picking up baggages and stuff. Right in that curve, you know, right as you come off the road. And that's not the, you know, that's citizens throwing stuff out. And that, you know, we got to do better than that. You know,
we do have an Adopt a Highway program in the county.
If you want to get a group together. I was thinking the same thing while you're talking. That would be an excellent idea, but I think it's just so horribly wrong to have citizens go out and pick up trash that day. the transporters of trash.
The commercial transporters.
Going off the truck, exactly. as you said, as they go by. That's just horrible.
That
can solution.
It should be.
That can
that's
be.
Supposed to be it's supposed to be covered. It's supposed to be covered. Set up on a 258-3.
Yeah, we got the Hub Patrol to go up there and try to write some littering tickets.
Yeah. Thank you for whatever assistance you can give.
Thank you, Colonel. Anybody have anything else? If not, do I have a motion to go into closed session?
So move.
You want to read the statute, please?
Yes. Going into closed session pursuant to North Carolina General Statutes 143-318-11A4. Also pursuant to North Carolina General Statutes 143-318-A6.
I have a second.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.